Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A man stands on a cliff top with his arms stretched out while the sky flashes with lightning in an approaching storm. Intrepid Pictures. If you ever... In a spacious, elegant bedroom, a slender, dark-haired woman in her 40s is packing an overnight bag. She is wearing a light-colored floral sundress. Seen from above, the woman lays out an ivory silk slip on a perfectly made bed, then folds it carefully and packs it. She puts on a wide-brimmed straw hat before walking away with the bag. Now the view looking down on the bed is of a man packing. He is about 60. His overnight bag is small and neat. As the view closes in on his bag, titles appear. Netflix presents a Netflix original film, an Intrepid Pictures production. The man places two sets of gleaming silver handcuffs in his bag. He looks at the cuffs and adjusts them minutely so that they are perfectly placed, then zips the bag closed. Title, Gerald's Game. That money too. That ain't all, that ain't all. Later, a red Jaguar travels down a secluded road lined with trees. As the car goes further, the road becomes more remote. The woman is in the passenger seat wearing the same dress as before. She looks out the window. A flicker of irritation passes over her face, and she reaches for the radio.
You want something else?
Nothing wrong with Sam. Just wanted to take in the scenery.
He reaches for her hand, sliding her skirt up her leg as he does so. She grabs his hand and kisses it dryly.
This is gonna be good for us, Jess. Really good.
She doesn't look at him, but her tight smile fades into an expression of trepidation as the Jaguar turns onto a dirt path. A little further on, Jess leans forward in her seat, spotting something ahead. He is checking his phone as he drives.
Gerald?
Yeah.
Gerald!
He hits the brakes.
Oh, shit!
A stray dog in their path is eating roadkill.
Oh, he's starving.
At the sound of the horn, the dog backs off reluctantly, eyes on the car. Gerald drives forward slowly.
Should do something about those strays.
You know what? I think he had a collar. He might belong to someone.
Well, he won't for long. If he keeps going for roadkill, he's going to be roadkill himself.
She looks back at the dog.
We're not going back for him.
No.
We're not.
I know.
The Jaguar turns up an unpaved driveway toward a brick house, parking under a carport. Beyond the house is a glimpse of water. They get out and he checks his phone.
Not again. Just be 2 minutes, babe, okay? Yeah. I understand, but the only way we can move forward is if they accept the non-compete clause.
She leaves him standing near the back of the car, on the phone, and continues through the trees around the side of the house toward the water. With her sun hat on, she steps through the dappled shade. In front of her is an expanse of beach. Sunlight plays on the calm surface of the lake, and she strolls through the yard along the tree line. She tilts her face up to the sun. Everything is in place on the patio, looking as though it has been carefully prepared. She continues onto the beach, pausing to take in the gorgeous view. Inside, she checks the fridge. It is half full, with things like chocolate-covered strawberries and champagne.
You stalked us.
Yeah, enough for the whole weekend.
She reaches for a small package wrapped in butcher's paper. Next, she is slicing up a richly marbled steak at the counter.
Here, boy. You hungry?
She sits out front on a step with the plate of meat, scanning the woods.
You out there?
Meanwhile, at the vanity in the master bedroom, Gerald looks critically at himself in the mirror. He glances toward his overnight bag on the bed and then shakes out a single blue pill into his hand. Holding it in his mouth for a moment, He chases it back with water and looks at his reflection self-consciously. She is still on the step when the dog pads tentatively out of the trees. It is a scruffy German shepherd, too thin, with a matted black coat. She smiles.
Mm-hmm. There you are. What could I have for you?
She lowers the plate. The dog watches her, anxious.
It's okay. There you go, my poor prince.
What are you doing?
Oh, I was just...
It runs off.
Just trying to feed that dog.
That's Kobe ribeye. It's actually from Kobe. It's $200 a portion.
Sorry, there were four in the fridge, I figured.
You got such a good heart. So I married.
For better or worse?
No, just I'll leave it. It'll be the best meat he's ever had. Let's go in, get comfy.
Okay.
They head in.
I would have believed that.
They pass through a small courtyard between an outer door and the house.
Sorry.
No problem.
She notices they have left the door open.
Do you want to open some champagne now, or should we?
Good.
In front, the dog edges back toward the plate, watching the house. They walk through the dining room hand in hand, smiling. The lake is visible through the windows. They pass the sideboard, and their wedding photo is angled to catch the afternoon sun, the shadows from the potted plants around it taking shape on the wall. In the bedroom, she smooths the ivory slip down over her hips as she stands by the bed. She climbs onto the coverlet, reaching behind to pull the sales tag from the strap of the slip and stashing it on the wooden shelf over the bed. The shelf is framed on each side by slender yet robust carved wooden bedposts. The room is gently lit by the afternoon light filtered through sheer curtains on the windows to the garden. She stretches on her side in a self-conscious but alluring pose.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Gerald steps out of the bathroom in black briefs, holding the handcuffs.
Wow, babe.
You look amazing.
He holds up the handcuffs playfully, and she reaches for him, rising to her knees. As he steps toward her, she pulls back, rubbing the back of her hand against her mouth.
Sorry, babe. Gloss.
She leans into him, and he cups her face in his hands tenderly. They kiss, softening into each other with some of the nervous tension melting away. His hands slide lightly over her body to her breasts. As the cuffs dangle from his fingers, he pushes her back roughly against the pillows. She is startled. He smiles, squeezing the cuffs as they click.
Gotta say, I was expecting, you know, more novelty things like with velvet or silk or something.
No. He's the real deal. I mean, the others can just break. You get going too hard.
He closes one cuff around her left wrist.
This is good. You'll like this.
He stretches her arm out and attaches the other end of the cuff to the bedpost, smiling, satisfied that it has locked. Her right hand flutters up against her chest as he attaches the second set of cuffs to the bedpost first, then reaches for her arm and tightens the loose cuff around her wrist.
Is it okay?
Sure.
Try to move.
She tries but cannot move more than a few inches. He is on top of her and pushes against her.
I love this slip.
Oh, good. I bought it special.
Shoulders.
He pushes himself off the bed and steps toward the vanity. Her eyes follow him. He takes his time grinning at her before filling the water glass again. She notices the prescription bottle of Viagra on the counter. He wipes his mouth and grins at her captive form.
Well, look what I found.
What?
I bet you want me to leave.
Putting the water on the shelf above the bed.
I bet you think your husband will be back any minute. But something tells me he won't.
He slides the pillows out from beside her head, tossing them on the floor. Seen from above, her face looks increasingly strained, her expression more guarded.
You can try to scream if you want to, but there's no one for miles.
Gerald?
Gerald. I'm sorry, baby, you don't get to know my name.
He lunges close over her face.
Try to go for help.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just trying.
Help! Somebody help me.
Come on. No, you said you're trying to make it feel real.
Yeah, I'm calling for help. It's kind of... What are we trying to do here?
Just try.
I'm sorry. I'm feeling a little weird. And I thought the point was to feel sexy, so
well,
much.
You'll settle into it.
Okay.
He kisses her, moving down. She nods.
Help! Somebody help!
He bites her breast.
Oh,
sorry, I'm just...
It really hurt. Oh.
You like it, though?
Pushing his hand against her mouth.
I don't like this. I'm serious, stop.
I don't like that. Make it feel real.
Stop it.
Make me.
Stop.
You can fight all you want. Daddy's gonna get what Daddy wants.
Fucking stop it! Uncuff me now!
Are you playing?
Wipe that absurd grin off your face. Uncuff me. And stop calling yourself fucking daddy.
Jesus.
She kicks. He pulls back.
Isn't this why we came up here? Fucking spice things up and try and push some boundaries?
I said I'd try a few things.
Yeah. You said you'd try.
And I tried. And it's not working. Is this really what it takes these days?
Well, fuck, Jess. Sorry. If I want to try and make things more exciting.
He turns away, crestfallen.
You haven't touched me in months. No interest whatsoever until I say I'll let you play some sex game and it's turning into a rape fantasy that I never knew you had. So please just unlock these. This isn't gonna save us, Jer. It never was. I feel ridiculous.
Nice. Now I'm ridiculous.
No, babe, I feel ridiculous. That's all
Jeez,
I'm saying.
I can't do a fucking thing right, can I?
That's not true.
No, you can't blame me. If I don't get excited anymore, and you won't even try.
Okay. Just uncuff me and we can talk.
What if I won't?
Confused.
What do you mean?
He stares, realizing he has the power.
What if I won't?
You have to.
What if I'm sweet?
He pulls her back toward him.
Go to the bathroom, get the keys off the sink.
Just be sweet.
Gerald.
Shh.
I need you to stop this.
Oh! Fuck!
He jolts back from her. She has bitten his lip.
The fuck is the matter with you?
With me?
He seems to snap out of it, seeing her trapped between the bedposts. He shakes his head, looking up.
God, how do we go so wrong?
He rubs at his left shoulder, rotating his arm. His face is getting red.
Because we were happy once.
Of course.
Weren't we?
Yes.
I mean, weren't we?
He stops, squinting at her. He shakes his head again.
What? Gerald.
His eyes get wide.
Honey. Oh, it's... Hey, that's not funny.
He goes rigid.
Gerald? Gerald? What's... Gerald? Oh. Hey! Hey! What's up?
He clutches his chest, the cord standing out on his neck, and he falls forward onto her. She starts to panic, her eyes rolling. She is straining under his weight.
Oh, Danny.
Seen from above, he is absolutely motionless. Her arms are locked to the side, and she tries to lift him and prop him up with her feet. She leverages him upright. His face is slack.
Gerald! Gerald! Baby, look at me! Wake up, Gerald! Gerald!
She jiggles her foot and he falls sideways. Eyes wide, Jesse stares up in disbelief. She struggles to sit, but the chains hold fast.
Gerald!
She sees his arm stretched against the tile.
Gerald! Say something! Please!
The reality of the situation seems to sink in, and she looks from the floor to the windows and around the room. She yanks against the cuffs, pulling hard. She tries sliding the right side up, but it catches on the carved ball near the top of the post. She tries the other side. Same thing. Pulling hard on both posts, she scrabbles to get her legs under her, but it is no use. She catches sight of his arm again and the top of his head. He has not moved.
Wake up! Wake up!
On the edge of hysteria, she catches herself.
You sound more real now, huh? You want to try again? Just get back up here. You can do anything you want. I mean it. Anything.
As she stares at the small part of him that she can see, a thin line of blood starts to pool out from the top of his head. It spreads over the gray stone tile, moving slowly but steadily. The view shifts in incremental stages away from the house, her screams getting quieter as the house gets smaller, until the house is hidden by woods, and there is no sound at all. Later, the woods surrounding the house are gray with shadow. Inside, the keys to the handcuffs are still on the vanity. Gerald's cell phone is on the dresser by the windows, untouched. Jesse sits lost in her thoughts.
Help. Wake up. Just wake up. It's time to wake up, honey. It's time to wake up.
Thinking she heard something, her eyes search the windows.
Hello?
She waits, going from focused to despondent.
Help. It'll be dark.
She looks down at the arm on the floor.
In an hour or so, it'll be so dark.
The blood is dark and still. Her view goes to the door.
Hey! We're back here! He's hurt! Nate! Kelly, is that you?
Watching the doorway, her expression goes from hopeful to fearful as the shadows move back and forth just out of sight in the hall. Her view moves low to the floor, and something seems to come close, then pull back. Caught between the bedposts, the energy drains out of her, and she realizes what has come into the house, just as a black snout becomes visible in the doorway.
Hi.
The dog steps forward gingerly.
How was the steak? It's $200 a portion, you know.
It inches toward Gerald's body, panting.
I don't suppose you're a rescue dog. I don't think so.
Now very near to Gerald's body, the dog licks its lips, sniffing closer to the congealed pool of blood. Jessie frowns as she starts to understand.
Hey. Hey. Back off from him.
It takes another step.
Hey!
It looks up for a moment, sizing up the threat. Then it sniffs at the arm.
Hey!
She kicks at the air, backing up.
Get away from him. Back off!
The dog goes straight to the blood.
Bad dog! Bad dog!
It licks the arm.
Hey! Bad dog! Go away!
Mouthing at the arm. The dog bites at Gerald's arm. Frantic, Jessie yanks on the cuffs. The dog rips a piece of flesh. Jessie twists her left hand up over the edge of the shelf, grabbing a book. She flings it.
Get the fuck away! Get the fuck away from him!
The dog retreats but lies across the doorway, the chunk of skin hanging from its mouth. Jessie gags.
No!
She lowers her head, and a hand reaches up, slapping onto the bed.
No!
Gerald is hauling himself up.
Oh! What the hell?
Oh my god, thank god. I thought you...
My goddamn arm!
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
The dog, right?
You were so right. I was so wrong.
The one you fed.
And cuff me and hold me. I'm so sorry, baby.
The goddamn dog.
She looks to the floor, catching her breath.
That goddamn dog.
The body is still there, and the blood.
The goddamn dog you had to feed. Smelled the blood, did what dogs do. Fuck you, roadkill. I hope you jump.
Stepping over his body, he kicks at the dog.
Should let you cut up all the steak. Maybe it would have filled him up. I guess they always smell fresher meat. Do you remember the joke I told at Christmas last year? You came up behind me. I was like 4 or 5 into the night already. I was loose, but not slurring yet. It was Tom Reynolds I was talking to. This low and conspiratorial in that very specific guys only fucking tone that says, you'll appreciate this, brother, but only you. You didn't hear the beginning of the joke, just the end. And what is a woman anyway? And I waited that cocky little pause I take before a punchline really makes me proud of myself. And Tom said, what? Like he already knew the answer. And I said...
She squeezes her eyes shut for a moment.
A life support.
Come on. And what is a woman, anyway?
He looks at her goadingly.
A life support system for a cunt.
Yeah, that was it. You never told me you heard it. You never raised an objection. You smiled through the night, hated me a little bit, but never once brought it up.
Because you're not like that. You don't talk that way.
Yeah, was I just putting on a show? For a client? Stooping to his level to get something I needed? Or was that who I really was? Underneath it all. Don't ask a question you don't want to know the answer to, I guess. A life support system for a stupid fucking cunt is more like it. How many hours have you been chained to that bed? You never heard me breathe, not once. And you know the sound? You've heard it every night for the last 11 years, a tiny rumbling snore I make in the back of my throat. Sometimes I make when I'm lost in thought. I forget myself, I zone out. That tiny little Gerald-only fucking purr. Hours of not hearing that sound. Total fucking silence, and you knew it. 5 minutes after my head hit the floor, you saw the blood, you heard the silence, you knew it, but you just laid there wasting precious minutes and hours and breath and life, calling my fucking name, talking to a corpse on the floor.
What's happening?
Well, I'm pretty sure you just lost your mind. But seeing a dog eating your husband will do that. I mean, if you're going to have a mental breakdown, that's a pretty great excuse.
Right. The blood stopped spreading a while ago.
And you did what you always do when it gets too much. You ran.
Touching her head.
In here. You just laid here, calling my name again and again and let critical time tick by like a stupid fucking...
Stop it.
You should have been thinking about life support. I mean, maybe that's why you're remembering that joke right now. It's got to be for some reason, after all. And why is that?
Time.
That's right. You're a life support system. You've been unplugged. There's still juice in there, but the charge is running down. And if you don't get out of the cuffs, it will go all the way to zero. When did we get here?
One-ish, I think.
And how long do we got in the bed?
An hour, maybe more.
We call that 2 o'clock, then, and I drop dead.
10 minutes, maybe, after.
When's the sun been setting?
7:15 or so.
Oh, that's pretty close. That's another 15, 20 tops. So let's say 5 hours so far. 5 hours you've wasted screaming for neighbors that are half a mile away if they're even here yet. And you know, if you really think about it...
Nate and Kelly said
they wouldn't be heading up here till June this year, and the maids came to prep for us yesterday.
Because the bed is made and the house is dusted.
Which means they're done and gone, and the grass...
was cut fresh.
Which means no gardeners. Because I arranged it all to get the place ready for us today. And I wouldn't want them interrupting my little game, so I probably gave them at least the weekend off.
So who could
possibly hear you screaming? Except Cujo over there?
She looks at the dog in the doorway. She sees that except for the body on the floor, there really is no one else. She takes in the empty room. With renewed determination, she tries to pull her right hand through the cuff. Gerald reappears near the left side of the bed.
You tried that?
I know.
You can pull till your wrists break. You're not getting out of those cuffs.
Ignoring her, she continues to pull. Her hand folds together beyond what seems physically possible. She pulls free.
I told you.
She slides across the bed and grabs the bedpost with both hands, yanking hard. It splinters and then snaps. With a triumphant look, she slips the other cuff off the broken tip. Gerald has disappeared again, but she strides toward the door, turning back with a smile toward the bed.
It's that easy.
He reappears. She is still cuffed.
Oh, babe, you're really loosening now. Except your hand won't fit through the cuff. And the bedpost is reinforced. Nice thought, though.
Shut up. Don't listen to him. He's the reason we're here to begin with. Look how he ended up.
I'm just telling her how things really are.
No, you're doing what you always did. Minimizing. Condescending. Men aren't so much blessed with penises as cursed by them. And we might die here today because of Gerald's 5 inches. Our life has to add up to more than that. I can't get out. What about the stories on the news where mothers lift their cars to save their children?
She's no mother.
What's that supposed to mean?
No maternal instinct.
Your career always came first.
Oh, that's what you said. Maybe even started to believe it. I'm not so sure you can hide things from me now.
Okay, you're wasting precious time here. I can't get out. You have to. I am chained to the goddamn bed. Don't recite facts to me. Wake up.
Says the voice in your head.
This is you. All over. Problem. Panic. Denial. Hoping if you look away, it'll magically vanish. If you don't wake up, you're gonna die in those handcuffs. And we both know you've been sleepwalking since you were 12 years old. Not now. If not now, when?
Not now, what?
He put you in those handcuffs way before Gerald did.
Gerald glares from one Jesse to the other.
Who's he?
Pressed back against the headboard, the real Jesse closes her eyes and takes a deep breath. When she opens her eyes sometime later, she sees that the imaginary Gerald, or Gerald 2, is gone. And so is the imaginary Jesse, or Jesse 2, radiant in her ivory slip. The real Jesse is totally alone, looking a complete wreck and still chained to the bed. The last sliver of daylight fades from the wall. Again, she looks at the cell phone on the dresser a few feet away.
If I can get to the phone.
She stretches toward it with her feet. The imaginary Gerald and Jesse appear by the vanity, watching.
Phone's gonna die anyway. I never charged it.
Or did a load of laundry, for that matter.
From the bed, the real Jesse grimaces at them and keeps trying. She stretches her foot as far as it will reach, but falls several inches short. Gerald, too, smirks at her failed effort.
Tough luck.
Okay, scrap that. Phone might as well be on Mars. If you can't get off the bed, you gotta live long enough for someone to find you on it.
The dog chews. She winces, clearly in pain, and closes her eyes. When she opens them, Gerald is stretched out beside her in the moonlight.
What's wrong?
My head hurts.
You know why?
Life support.
How long do you think someone lives without water?
3 days?
At best. Yeah, it seems like I've heard 3 days somewhere. That feels about right. And it's been what? 5, 6, 7 hours.
I wanted to please you so badly.
She looks tearfully at the pills on the vanity.
This was such a stupid fucking idea.
Remember when I first started taking those? I hid it. For what, 6 months?
I found the prescription.
You found it and you never said anything? I knew you'd seen it and I just stopped covering it up. We never talked about it, though.
But there was that one time.
At one time.
Late one night. You tried without a pill and it just wasn't working.
Yeah, I was as soft as a kitten.
Until you held my wrist above my head.
I hadn't done that before.
No, you had. This time, though.
I grabbed your throat. It was softly at first, but then I squeezed a little, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
And God, was I hard. It was harder than you'd felt in years. And you just laid there. And I went to town. And you moaned. Like a dutiful wife, never objected.
He smiles, his hand around her throat.
But for the first time in all those years, you wondered.
Dropping his hand.
How exactly did I marry?
We never really know. Because everybody's got a little corner in there somewhere. A button. They won't admit they want pressed. Year after year. I barely give you a glimpse of mine.
Now Jesse, too, is by the vanity.
One thing for sure, though. You're glad he took those little blue pills. Huh? You're glad. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me that you needed to. No, you're not listening. Take one, babe.
Appearing at the vanity, he takes a pill, knocking it back with a glass of water.
Now give it to her. Wait, give it to her. What are you? Give her what she needs.
He leans in and puts the glass on the shelf over her head.
God, for those pills. For those little blue pills that made Gerald so thirsty.
Alone again, Jesse strains to see if the glass is still there. She slides the cuffs up. The shelf is a rustic wood plank lying on two triangular braces above her head. She reaches up with her left hand, barely grasping the shelf edge, and positions her right hand at the other side. She tilts the shelf with her left hand, wincing. The glass slides into view, close to the edge. Stabilizing the shelf again, she stretches her right hand up to brace it and starts to tentatively lift the left edge on her fingertips so the plank tilts sideways to the right. In uneven increments, the glass slides. The front edge of the plank is unfinished and not straight. Jessie tracks the sound of the sliding with her eyes. She catches the short square glass on her right hand fingertips. With intense effort, she lifts the glass off the shelf using the very tips of her fingers and painstakingly lowers it to shoulder height. Gerald, too, leans in from the foot of the bed with a mocking look.
You're smirking. What?
The chain is too short to drink.
That's what?
She strains to bridge the gap. Her hands shake.
Stupid.
No.
Her hand starts to cramp. Jessie, too, leans in.
Don't you dare let it go.
But I can't.
Put it down.
Where?
Right where you caught it. Where you know you can reach it again.
She eases the glass back up to the shelf.
Okay, careful.
She looks desperate as she brings her arm down and spots the dog watching her from the doorway.
Go away.
It steps toward the body.
Look at me. That dog is just doing what it has to get along. And you have to do the same. Focus.
I can't.
You're right. Give up. Come tomorrow, you and Gerald will be together again. Inside the fucking dog. Can we please get back to work now?
I love this slip. I love this slip.
Oh, good. I bought it special.
You bought it brand new.
She closes her eyes, blocking out the others. When she opens them, she looks up to the left side of the shelf. Nothing is visible, but she reaches up to feel along the edge with her fingers. Her face lights up as she touches what she is looking for and slides it off the plank. It is the cardboard tag she removed from the back of her slip earlier. Ever so slowly, she curls the edges of the tag between the fingers of her left hand until it is roughly the shape of a straw. She looks at the dog as it settles in to chew on the meat it has just ripped off the body, blood staining the tile where it lies. Her hand trembles as she struggles to curl the edge of the tag around the rest, finishing just as it looks like she might drop it. Holding it by one tip, she sticks the other end in her mouth and clamps it between her lips like a cigarette. She turns to her right and pulls the glass down from the shelf above her head with a shaky grip. Tilting the glass toward her face, she stretches her neck toward it. The straw barely reaches, finally touching the surface of the water. She takes a few sips and the cardboard discolors as the water moves up the straw. Jessie, too, watches her closely from the other side of the bed.
Leave some for later.
After drinking about half of the water in the glass, she pulls her head back with the straw still clamped in her mouth and raises the glass to the shelf. With clawed fingers, she puts the straw beside it. Glassy-eyed, she watches the dog while it eats, totally unintimidated by her presence now. Her head falls forward and she closes her eyes before rousing herself with effort.
Why can't I keep my eyes open?
Stress makes your adrenaline and cortisol levels skyrocket and now you're crashing.
That's it. Just fade away. Soon this will all be fine. Well, maybe you should. If anyone's gonna find you, it'll likely be tomorrow, not tonight.
I will need my energy.
You will.
She shuts her eyes and her head lolls to the side against the headboard. Jesse, too, and Gerald, too, stand on either side of the bed, watching her. The view of the bedroom fades into the dark woods surrounding the house. Later, inside the house, a view down the dark hallway leading toward the bedroom shows the dog sleeping. It lifts its head as though startled by a noise. The bedroom curtains ripple in a breeze from the open window. The dog looks anxiously down the seemingly empty hallway until it dashes off toward the dining room and out the open front door. In the bedroom, Jessie is slumped against the headboard, handcuffs gleaming in a shaft of moonlight. Her arms are suspended at an unnatural angle, and her legs are curled awkwardly to the side. She wakes, turning toward the window. Moonlight casts strange shadows as she scans the room to see that she is alone. Even the dog has gone.
Where'd you go, you little shit?
Cramps rack her limbs. She tries to shift her position, shaking out her hands, but seems to see something in a shadow by the corner of the room.
Hello?
A gray figure steps out of the corner. It is tall, like a living shadow. A man comes into view with a pale face, a bald, misshapen head, and long arms. He wears a dark suit and holds an old-fashioned medical bag. Mm-hmm. Jessie squeezes her eyes shut and shakes her head. When she looks again, the figure is a little bit closer, looking down on her. He steps closer to the edge of the bed.
I need help.
He smiles crazily and leans forward, revealing the contents of the bag. In the light from the window, Jessie sees it is full of dry bones and bits of jewelry. Jessie shakes her head at him.
You're not real. Not real.
Squeezing her eyes shut, she turns forward. The figure moves, his shadow falling over her outstretched legs.
Maybe.
Gerald, too, beside her ear.
Or maybe you're just not safe anymore. People are safe from ghouls and ghosts. And the living dead in the daylight. And they're usually safe from them at night, if they're with others. But a person alone, in the dark. Women, alone in the dark, are like open doors, Jessie, and if they scream for help, who knows what might answer? Who knows what people see in the moment of their solitary death? Is it so hard to believe that some of them might have died of fear? No matter what the words on the death certificate say. Died of fear. Because they saw at their bedside the moonlight man. Maybe that's just what death looks like.
Not real.
Then why did the dog leave?
Her eyes fly open. The room looks empty except for Gerald, too, leaning close.
Maybe he just moved under the bed. He could reach up at any time, put his hand on your hip.
He disappears. Then a male hand reaches up from the floor. It's Gerald again, wearing a retro cabana shirt. He climbs toward her.
And if he wants that cold, dirty hand on your soft, warm flesh, there's not much you can do about it, Mouse.
What did you call me?
Close your eyes. If there's a monster under your bed, it won't bother you if you're asleep. Everybody knows that, Mouse.
Don't call me that.
Dream your dreams. Dream deep.
Jessie is fighting to stay awake, her eyes angry and frightened. But she drifts off. Gerald's face fades away, and the screen goes dark.
No, help your father, please.
You okay, Jessie?
It's so much smaller than I remember.
These are bigger. Come on, Mouse.
In a dream of a memory, Jessie at age 12 arrives at a different lake house with her family. Her pregnant mom, her younger sister and brother, and her dad, a handsome man about 40, who is wearing the same cabana shirt Gerald just had on.
For the first time in 26 years, a total solar eclipse will occur in the United States. The few and lucky cities along the path of the eclipse who have decided to create official viewing areas have set their...
Over sounds of a radio broadcast, the family is getting ready to view an eclipse while on the lake. On the dock, the younger children show the dad the cardboard viewers they have made.
One of the most rare and beautiful natural phenomena on the planet.
Oh, you
Why don't
did
we,
it!
Like, finish some. Yeah, I'll need this too.
All right. Here, go on out to the boat now.
Yes, sir.
Be careful.
He looks back toward the beach. Young Jessie is bent over pouring ice into a cooler. A pink portable radio sits nearby. Her mother comes out of the house, and her dad heads off to the boat.
Totality, we can expect to experience 2 minutes and 20 seconds of totality, starting today at around 4:17 p.m.
Do you want to make some sandwiches for the boat?
I don't think I want to go out on the boat today. The lake scares me. People have drowned out there, you know.
Later.
If she's afraid of the water, then I'm not going to force her out onto a boat.
We came here as a family to do this on the lake. It is not going to kill her to spend some time with the rest of us. She's just a complete daddy's girl.
That's normal, isn't it? What?
Jessie is listening.
You know, you didn't even want to go skiing with us over Christmas, and we didn't force you out onto the mountain, did we? No, we left you at the lodge and we let you relax.
You want to stay with her? Stay with her. Fine. She's a nuisance anyway. She picks fights with her brother. She rolls her eyes at me incessantly.
She's 12.
Yeah, no smiles and sweetness for daddy.
Well, that's totally age-appropriate behavior, isn't it?
Sure. It's just...
She hides around the corner in a sundress.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay. I'm not...
Later, Jessie watches from a patio swing on the beach as the boat pulls out with her mom and siblings on board, along with a couple of friends. Her dad changes the radio station. She smiles.
That's better. Unless you don't want to listen to Daddy's old man music.
No, I like it.
He moves closer to the swing, holding a cardboard viewer.
That's a beautiful dress. Is that your new one?
Yeah. Mom said it was too short.
Mom's wrong. You look amazing. You look like a proper young woman. Here, so you don't hurt your eyes.
Thanks. Where's yours?
Sitting beside her.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I think your mom might have taken it. Mm. We'll scoot close and we'll share.
Okay.
He puts his arm around her and looks through the viewer.
It's starting.
He gives her the viewer. She looks at the sun, but he looks at her.
Wow.
As the shadow spreads across the sun, she looks at her dad, uncomfortable at first, then smiles.
What?
Just remembering something. You and me sitting here together.
She puts the viewer down.
When you were a little girl, you used to sit on my lap.
He'd point up at the stars and he'd ask me how far away each one were.
That's embarrassing.
No. It's the sweetest. Some great evenings out here. You and me. Me and Mouse.
She looks through the viewer. The shadow inches over the sun.
Nah, that's stupid.
What?
I was gonna say...
What?
Well, how about it? For old time's sake. Nah, that's silly. That's just a silly idea from your silly old man. I was just thinking about how happy those times were, that's all. Hell, I know you're a grown woman now. You're too big to sit on your daddy's lap anymore. I just miss my little girl sometimes.
She considers, looking through the viewer. The sun is almost gone and the sky is getting dark. She frowns, then arranges her expression into a smile.
I'm not too big.
You sure?
Yippers.
She perches on his knee. He gives her a peck on the shoulder.
Mouse. Love you.
I love you too, Daddy.
Jesse gazes through the viewer. There are several boats on the lake, silhouetted against the eerie red sky. Behind Jesse, her dad moves slightly, concentrating on her shoulder, but his intention unmistakable.
Awesome, it's just amazing. Daddy, you're missing it.
You keep watching.
Slowly, she lowers the viewer, fear in her eyes.
Daddy?
You just keep watching.
Daddy?
Just keep watching.
A red halo glows fiercely in the sky, and the real Jesse wakes up, still chained to the bed. The sun is up. Flies are buzzing at the body. The dog is back. Jesse's hands and arms are mottled purple with lack of circulation, cramping.
Jesus!
We've been hanging on them all night. They need circulation.
It burns!
Her fingers claw unnaturally. She hammers at the mattress with her feet, writhing in pain.
Cramps. They'll... The cramps will pass. Keep pedaling. Get the blood flowing.
Jesse, too, leans on the edge of the bed, watching Jesse in sympathy. Even the dog looks up in alarm. A view to the bed from the dog's angle shows the body stretched out on the floor. Jesse starts to relax.
Oh, God. Oh, God, that hurts.
She takes a drink with her straw, choking on the water. After getting the glass back up on the shelf, she catches her breath and looks around. The intensity seems to drain out of her as she watches the flies on the coverlet.
Bad dreams.
Gerald, too, appears.
You never told me. About the eclipse.
I never told anyone.
That's a marriage, isn't it? Telling each other the difficult things?
Not that one, no.
No wonder it didn't work.
It wasn't relevant to us. Really. You married an older man. Your father was a lawyer. Gerald was a lawyer. Your father minimized you, objectified you.
Let's not forget my burgeoning drinking problem.
Babe, if you had a drinking problem, it's certainly cured now. The point is, Jesse, you married into the only dynamic you've ever known. You were a girl, he was a man, and you never walked away from that. That afternoon never ended.
It's not enough that I'm here. I also have to be there again?
You tell me. You'd gotten your period for the first time just a month before, right? Maybe that's what got him going. He smelled the blood and did what dogs do. Our friend in the hall is every man you've ever known. He had Kobe ribeye.
It's actually from Kobe.
Till he smelled Gerald. Your father had your mother till you were nice and ripe.
It wasn't like that.
And Gerald, the late hours, the mystery callers, the weekend trips. What was he really doing? You ignored it, but you knew his hunger for you had faded and a dog's gotta eat.
I handled it.
Sure. Just like you handled those last few minutes on Daddy's lap.
He didn't rape me. He didn't even touch me. He only touched himself. And if you want to blame someone, I might as well blame my mother or the boat. The sundress that was too short. What he did to me on that swing wasn't the worst thing anyone's ever done.
No, that would be what he did to you after, in the bedroom.
Jesse glares at her.
What did he do?
Nothing. He just talked to me.
Nothing. Nothing on the swing. And nothing in the room. Might as well have been a bad dream.
He had a dream. That night at the lake house. There was a woman standing over a deep well looking down into the blackness. And I'm in the well looking up at her. The sky was so dark behind her. The eclipse burning overhead, and smell in that well. It was like pennies and oysters. She was standing there in her red dress, looking right at me.
What was in the well? So many secrets.
You thought yours could go down there, too. Just throw them in the well, down in the dark.
Who was the woman?
I remember thinking maybe she was supposed to be me. Because she would never tell. I knew that, looking at her. She'd die before she told. I could do. I don't know why I thought of that. It was just a dream.
Like the man in the corner.
He was definitely a bad dream.
I don't know, princess.
A fly crawls across his teeth. He flicks it with his tongue.
You can tell yourself that if you need to.
He was a trick of the mind. Just like you, Gerald. Just like both of you.
Then why won't you look over there for more than a second? What are you afraid you're gonna see?
Why are you still listening to him?
Shh!
She pushes herself up a little further, and more of the body comes into view. Nearby on the tile is a bloody smudge, almost like a footprint.
It's probably from the dog.
It's bigger than that. Look at it again. I think it's a footprint. And if it is...
Shut up!
It was death you saw. He'll be back tonight, Jesse. And when you're dead, he'll have your wedding ring in his case. With the rest of his pretty things. His souvenirs.
I am gonna close my eyes.
No.
And count to 10.
Stay awake.
And when I open them, you will both be gone. 10. 10, 9.
Do you hear me?
8.
Stay awake.
I'm awake. 7, 6, 5, 4,
3, 2, 1. She opens her eyes and sees herself at age 12 back at the lake house, looking at her dress in the mirror. After a moment, an overhead view shows her arranging it on the bed. Her dad comes to the door.
You all right, Mouse?
She backs away as he comes toward her.
I'm so sorry.
He advances around to her side of the bed, and she backs up as far as she can, wrapping her arms around herself. She is wearing jeans and a long-sleeve sweater. He sits on the bed, effectively blocking her way past, and pats the bed beside him. After a few moments, she sits, facing straight ahead.
I'm sorry you were there when I... It's not like I touched you, Jesse. But still, yeah. Maybe we should tell Mom. I think we have to, don't you? I hate to. Just because things have been pretty tense between the two of you lately. Hell, they've been tense between us too, with the baby and all. This. Oh, this can make things a lot worse.
This sinks in. She is struggling.
She won't think it's your fault. I'm sure. Fairly sure. I mean, she might. We'll know it wasn't your fault.
Maybe we shouldn't tell her.
I have to. We have to.
Why?
Because.
Real Jesse.
Because you can't keep it a secret.
Because you can't keep it a secret.
Back to young Jesse, the idea of a secret taking hold.
I mean, if it's ever going to come out, then it's better for both of us that it happened now. Not in a week or a year or even 10 years from now.
He looks slyly, hopeful. She is crying silently.
Please. I won't tell. Please.
I mean, if we don't tell your mom today, then we could never tell anyone.
I would never. Not ever. Ever.
And not just your mother. Not anyone. That's a big responsibility for a little girl. I'm sorry, a young woman. But you might be tempted with friends. One of them tells you a secret. Maybe you might want to tell them.
Never.
Or your brother, or your sister. There might come a time when you want to tell
them. No.
Jess, I think it might be better for both of us if this were all out in the open now. Take our medicine. I mean, she can't kill us.
Please. Please. Please, please. Please, just don't tell her. I won't tell anybody. Ever.
You know, I've never been able to refuse you anything that you really wanted, have I? Okay, Jess. We'll try things your way.
Thank you, Daddy.
With real Jesse, he sits near her right handcuff.
So I guess we have a deal. I say nothing. You say nothing, not to anyone else. Not even to each other. We walk out of this room, and it never happened.
He looks at her intently.
Okay.
He drops his gaze.
I did a shameful thing.
You looked away when you said that. You were able to face me with the lies. But it was the truth that finally made you turn away.
I don't know what came over me. Maybe it was the eclipse. Thank God, we'll never see another one.
Facing young Jesse again.
Nothing happened. Nothing ever happened.
She nods, confusion in her eyes.
Come on, let's get grilling. They should be back in a bit.
He gets up and leaves the room. Young Jesse falls back on the bed, across the carefully laid out sundress, her arms flung out to either side. She looks straight up, obviously trying to work through what has just happened. And then she frowns, lifting her head to look at her feet, where the moonlight man is licking at her bare toes. The real Jesse wakes, kicking, and boots the dog in the face. It snaps at her leg. She slams it away with her other foot, and it rips into the body on the floor. The dog retreats to the doorway with a hunk of meat. Jesse winces and rotates her wrists, catching her breath. Gerald, too, steps into view and looks down at her, smirking. She frowns when she sees him.
He'll try that again. It's fresher meat. You're still strong enough to kick, but you won't be for long, and he can smell that.
He looks away from her prone body, out the window.
It's afternoon already. Sun's starting down. And no one came this morning. Or if they did, you were asleep. Eventually, someone will find you, Jess, but it might take a long time. The first assumption will be we're off on some wild romantic fling. I mean, why not? Only you and I know at the end. I can only get it up if you're handcuffed to the bed. For the rest of the world, we're the picture of marital function. But sooner or later, people will start looking at my people. I mean, there are a couple of women in New Orleans you call friends, but you've never really let them inside your life, have you? So none of them are going to worry much if you drop out of sight for a week or 10 days. Well, I have appointments. And when I don't show up by Friday, there'll be questions. That's how we'll start. I think the caretaker will actually discover the bodies. He'll call the cops when he spots you through the window. Or when he smells us. He'll turn his face away while he throws the spare blanket from the closet over you because he won't want to see your fingers sticking through the handcuffs. Stiff as pencils, white as candles. But most of all, he won't want to look at the expression of horror on your face. The forensics unit will show up with the county coroner. When they pull off the blanket, they will wince and nod and tell each other the woman on the bed died hard. But they won't know the half of it. They won't know the real reason your eyes are staring and your mouth squeeze. It's because what you saw at the end, coming out of the dark. And they'll take you to the medical examiner, he'll cut you open, inventory your guts. He'll have a peek at what's left of your last meal. He'll take a little section of brain to look at under his microscope, but in the end...
He stretches out close, shaking his head.
In the end, he'll just call it death by misadventure. They were playing a harmless game.
Harmless.
Only the gentleman had a heart attack at a critical moment. And the woman was left, too. Well, it's best not to get into it. Just to say the lady died hard. You only need to look at her to see that. And maybe someone will notice your wedding ring is gone. But they won't hunt for it. For long, if at all. They won't notice. And one of your bones, not an important one, third phalange in your right foot, let's say, is also gone. But we'll know, won't we, Jess? We'll know he took them. Because it was death. And you did see. As people who die in the lonely places do. It was death. And tonight when the sun goes down, he'll be back for you.
Shh. Little baby, don't say a word. It's gonna buy you. I'm gonna die.
Everything dies. All things serve the beam.
If that mockingbird doesn't sing, I'm gonna die.
Yes, love.
He's gonna buy you a diamond ring.
He'll come quicker that
if
way.
If that diamond ring turns...
Then that way you won't have to wait for the Moonlight Man.
Gonna buy you looking glass.
Gerald, too, has disappeared, replaced by her dad. She falls asleep. The screen goes dark. She dreams of a black sky, branded with a fiery red halo around the eclipse. Adult Jessie stands on the beach in her slip, looking directly at the sun. She turns her head and looks over her shoulder toward the house, then heads inside. Behind her, the lake is glowing crimson with the reflection from above. It is as though a hole has been burned through the fabric of the sky. Inside, she walks down the hallway to the doorway of young Jessie's bedroom. The girl sits on the bed with her back to the door, wearing the sundress. She looks out the window at the red sky, glowing through sheer curtains. Adult Jessie watches her for a moment, then walks slowly around to face her. She sees that young Jessie wears handcuffs, her hands idle in her lap.
I'm sorry.
I don't want you to be sorry.
Then what do you want?
I want you to remember.
You think I don't remember? I remember every moment. I remember every shame-filled glance he threw my way. And I remember Mom looking... But not seeing.
It's not what I'm talking about.
Because seeing? It would have meant my little sister was also doomed to let that son of a bitch steal her childhood, and Mom would have died before facing that. So it was up to me to protect Maddie. Even though it meant that I never felt like part of the family again. And that wasn't my job description, was it? My job was to be a kid. And suddenly that wasn't an option.
You had everything you need to survive from the beginning. You just have to remember. Not the sun. Not the eclipse. After.
The dining room.
We had fun on the boat. Do you guys think we should get a boat?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do hope it was as pretty here as it was on the boat.
It was awesome.
Ah!
Yeah. That was fun.
It was fun.
It was beautiful here too, right, Mouse? We had fun.
Yeah, did you have a nice time with your dad, Jess?
Young Jessie, at the table, squeezes her water glass. It shatters.
Jesus! Jess, are you okay?
I'm sorry. It was an accident.
Come on, let's get this cleaned up.
Her hand is cut and bleeding. As her dad leads her away, she locks eyes with her mother, who freezes. In Jessie's eyes is an expression of pure terror. The light goes out over the table, and the room falls into darkness. In the bathroom.
Oh, it's not so bad. I think you'll live. Does it hurt?
It's okay.
Just be careful. Last thing I want.
Real Jessie wakes.
Is to have to take you to the emergency room and have your fingers sewn back on.
The view widens and reveals that young Jessie and her dad are by the vanity just off real Jessie's bedroom. The light in the bathroom area fades. Real Jessie looks down at her handcuffs, then up to the glass on the shelf.
It's gonna fucking hurt. But the thing about blood is that until it clots, it's as slick as oil.
That will not work.
Maybe not. But the wrists have fewer nerves than the body's other checkpoints. That's why slitting wrists is always the best way to...
I know so much about that.
Go too deep, you'll bleed to death. Do nothing, I'll die of seizures, dehydration, or dog. Or when my visitor with a bag of bones shows up tonight.
The sun is starting down. He'll be here soon.
Then I'll have to hurry.
Barely working, aren't they?
I won't need much.
Your legs won't be reliable. It's been a day and a half since you walked on them.
If my hands pull this off, my legs better do their fucking part. Okay. Visualize it then. All of it.
Nodding, she runs her hand up the bedpost to the shelf, finding the glass and feeling it a split in the wood.
Okay.
Lowering her hand, she looks at the phone on the dresser, then over at the keys on the vanity. Jessie, too, leans in.
Once you start this, you're not going to be able to stop. Everything has to go very fast because your system is already dehydrated. And Jessie,
huh?
You know, if anything goes wrong, it won't matter.
Goodbye.
She takes one more look around the room, then squeezes her eyes shut, steeling herself. She looks barely alive, but when she opens her eyes, there is a determination that wasn't there before. She slides her hand up to grasp the glass, pouring out the rest of the water. The dog watches her closely, alert.
You stay right there, dog.
Gripping the glass as firmly as possible, she finds the edge of the shelf and the split in the wood with the side of her thumb and gets ready. Splinters of glass fall across her face and hair. She lowers her right hand to see the damage. The glass has shattered. She is holding it tight. Blood runs down her wrist toward her elbow. She relaxes her hand and most of the pieces fall away. She squeezes the last few shards into her palm and looks at the mess. One triangular piece of glass is the right size and shape. She raises her hand to wedge it into the split in the wood. It stays on the shelf. Shaking the rest away, she braces her bruised purple wrist against the shard and bears down, pressing the jagged tip against her flesh. Blood pours down her arm.
God.
Dragging her wrist across the glass, it cuts into her skin and makes a line like the edge of a glove. Then she shifts, pulling her hand over the glass so that the skin splits open up the middle of her palm. Sobbing, she lowers her hand and grinds it against the handcuff. It starts to peel the flesh away from the bones. Pulling down, the skin scrunches. Her hand pops out of the cuff, the meat under the skin fully exposed. She cannot look at the trembling wreck of her hand, so she rolls over to the other side of the bed and pushes against the post with her shoulder, rolling back to reach out with her foot toward the phone. Her useless, degloved hand is a bloody pulp. She keeps it elevated. Squeezing the phone between her toes, she rolls over again to the other side of the bed and plops the device on the mattress near her left hand. She presses the power button, showing the battery is drained. Frantic now, she hooks her left arm around the bedpost and drags the bed as far as possible toward the keys on the vanity before getting caught on a nightstand. The dog watches her from the doorway, guarding a piece of meat. She stretches her mangled hand toward the vanity, sliding a key against her thumb and drops it. She tries again, reaching further for the last key. Her hand is shaking violently, but she lifts the key toward her mouth. It rattles against her teeth. Biting down, she turns toward her trapped left arm, managing to insert and turn the key with her teeth. The cuff opens. She is free. Scrambling toward the sink, she scoops water with her left hand into her mouth. She retches, but drinks more. She grimaces at her reflection in the mirror, then turns away from the tap, digging in the drawers with her good hand until she finds what she needs, maxi pads. Holding a pad in her left hand, she rips it open with her teeth. Bracing against the vanity, she wraps it around her shredded right hand. It sticks. She gets another one, nearly fainting but managing to open it. She wraps it around as well, the blood from her hand already soaking through. She presses down to make it stick. In a daze, she staggers toward the car keys on a dresser in the far corner of the room. She goes limp and falls to the floor, unconscious. She wakes to the dog biting her ruined right hand. She strikes it with her left hand, knocking it away. She sees she has fallen on top of Gerald's body, or what is left of it. Much of his face is gone, including his ear. His skull is exposed, and flies are everywhere. She pushes herself up and away, lurching toward the car keys. With her arm outstretched, she makes contact, pushing the button on the key fob. The dog begins to growl, and she tenses, turning slowly to look over her shoulder, but it is looking away from her down the hall. It is frightened of whatever it sees, running away into the bathroom. Her face hardens and she steps toward the hallway, keys in hand. With the hallway in front of her, she sees the Moonlight Man standing in the dining room near the open front entry. He grins, clutching his bag. Squaring her shoulders, she limps past the mess on the floor and down the hall toward him.
You're only made of moonlight.
moonlight.
As she gets close, she sees that he is wearing a string of something around his neck, like a homemade necklace. She gets closer. It is a collection of human ears. She slips her wedding ring off with her shaky, mangled right hand and drops it into his palm, then stumbles away. He holds the huge diamond so it shines in the moonlight. She backs the Jaguar out of the carport, sliding up over a tree root as she steers to face the right way. Changing gears, she sees an image of Gerald, dressed in jeans and a dark shirt, holding his hand up in a silent wave. She smiles tightly at him, and he tilts his head. She puts the car in drive, and he disappears. Speeding down the forest road, her eyelids flutter as she struggles to stay awake. It is very dark. Her head drops forward. The car swerves. Again, and the headlights of the car fade. When she wakes, the sky has turned blood red, and the fiery halo of the eclipse is lighting the dark road ahead. She lifts her head, peering at the eerie light and the trees outlined against the strangely glowing sky. Glancing in the rearview mirror, she sees the moonlight man in the back seat looking back at her. He is grinning, and his eyes are like the halo of the eclipse. She takes her hand off the wheel. He reaches around and whispers,
"Mouse."
Slamming into a tree, the car bounces back a few feet, then stops. Lights come on at a nearby house. The Jaguar is totaled, the hood crumpled, and the windshield smashed. The view slides in closer. Jesse is still behind the wheel, covered in blood and unconscious, but otherwise, the car is empty. She opens her eyes, looking around in a daze. Flashlights in the distance are coming through the trees. Her window is smashed. She gets out, taking a few steps and raising her hand before falling forward. She hits the ground hard. Footsteps rush toward her. Blood covers her face. The screen goes dark. Now, a woman's right hand opens a desk drawer and takes out a creamy-colored paper. The hand wears a thin black glove with the fingers cut off at the knuckle. It trembles, reaching for a pen. The left hand removes the lid, and the hand in the glove prepares to write. The person at the desk is Jessie. She looks healthy and strong.
I'm writing this letter with my right hand, nestled snug in its frictionless burn glove. 3 skin grafts later, it still doesn't work quite right, and it still hurts to write. But that's good. This letter should hurt to write.
Thinking back to the hospital.
The doctors, the cops, and even the reporters accepted my amnesia at face value. And why not? People who undergo serious trauma often block out memories. The cops knew that even better than the lawyers. And I knew it better than any of them. Gerald's firm kept the details out of the papers, and that was kind. The coroners confirmed it was a heart attack and a long time coming. The insurance paid, the headlines faded, and life went on. The new normal.
Her lawyer's office fades into her bedroom.
Well, not normal. Never normal. Every night, just before I closed my eyes,
In the bedroom, a red glow lights the night. Across from the bed, the Moonlight Man waits with his case. Jesse stirs, sitting up, staring with horror at the sight of him. His eyes are lit like the eclipse. He grins, tilting the case forward so she can see his treasures. Then he is gone.
If it wasn't him, if it wasn't his face keeping me from sleep, it was the question. That in all the reports, all the cops that combed through that house, they never found my wedding ring. What got me through those nights was you. Thinking of you. And why you came to me that day. You in your sunless world, always on that swing. What you needed me to understand.
She imagines her dad putting handcuffs on young Jesse.
That his shackles were silence. And his were comfort.
Gerald, on their wedding day, slides the ring on her finger.
My days were better. I took the insurance money and I started a foundation for girls and boys like us. I spent so long never telling that story, so I made sure that I did. I tell that story every day to every kid it could possibly help.
When I was 12,
talking to a teenage boy,
the lake house with my family.
And while that helped my days, I still sat up at night, waiting for that pale face in the moonlight to claim his runaway bride.
The empty bedroom fades to a morning balcony.
6 months after the handcuffs, 6 months of being a widow, 6 months of living death, and then Raymond Andrew Jobert's picture first appeared in the paper.
Headlines like, "Crypt Creeper Captured in Alabama."
2 years ago, reports of graveyard vandalism in the backwoods of Alabama hit the papers, but I never read about them, not in New Orleans. And they were tiny stories, buried. Someone was breaking into crypts and mausoleums of small-town cemeteries with drills, bolt cutters, and hacksaws, and stripping corpses of jewelry. As the months went by, it escalated. Incidents started being reported in Louisiana. He gouged out eyes, cut corpses' throats. Last February, two were found without noses. Later, hands, then ears. Something I'd always assumed was the dog. And when it came to removing genitalia after having sex with the dead, he stuck strictly to the gentleman. This was clearly extremely lucky for me. I only noticed when he finally made the front page. He'd graduated, it seemed, from the dead. And one night, a man woke up to find Raymond Jobert in his room, naked, trying to cut off his ear. Jobert suffers from acromegaly, a progressive enlargement of the hands, feet, and face that happens when the pituitary gland goes into warp drive, causes the forehead to bulge, and abnormally long arms that dangle almost to his knees. They went to his only known address, a farmhouse on Kingston Road. They didn't find him there, but they did find his sister and her husband, who he called his mommy and daddy. He'd scalped them both and eaten most of daddy. They found 50 bell jars containing ears, lips, fingers. They think he may have killed as many as a dozen people in the last 5 years, but for some reason he spared me. This monster was real. Real as they come. As real as the cuffs. As the dog. As real as the eclipse. And so I had to write this to you, Mouse. Because you're the only person who'd understand. And you're the only one who truly matters.
Young Jesse reads the letter at the lake during the eclipse.
He's being arraigned tomorrow, and I'm going to see him. Because the people who are supposed to protect you from the monsters turned out to be monsters themselves. And it almost killed you.
We need the sun to come back out. After so long, I think we deserve the sun.
Adult Jesse and young Jesse sit on the swing, staring at the eclipse. Reporters outside the courthouse.
The cameras would not be allowed inside the courtroom for the arraignment. An unusual decision in a case that's already full of surprises.
The Alabama Police Department claim that Chabert has not spoken to single sources with the Alabama State
Police Department. Tell us, Raymond Andrew Jobert hasn't spoken a single word since his arrest, not even to his public defender.
Court is already in session when Jesse enters and the gallery is full. She walks up the aisle toward the defendant, a tall, pale man in an orange jumpsuit who towers over his public defender. His back is to the gallery, but shackles are visible.
28 counts, desecrating human remains. 16 counts, breaking and entering.
Hey.
4 counts, assault and battery.
Hey!
Ma'am?
He turns. She catches her breath. It is the Moonlight Man.
You're not real.
He grins, raising his arms, snapping his zip-tie cuffs.
You're not real.
Officer!
You're only made of moonlight.
His eyes are mocking her, smug. And before the officers secure him, his arms are out like he is handcuffed to a bed. She steps closer to him, and he becomes her dad. Another step, and he is Gerald. The room seems to slow down, and she leans in, eyes wide. He cranes toward her.
You're so much smaller than I remember.
His face is stunned. He has no response for this. With a small smile, she turns and calmly walks out of the courtroom, head high. Minutes later, outside the courthouse, the reporters and other people milling about are too preoccupied to notice her. A weight seems to lift from her shoulders and she pauses, tilting her face up and putting on sunglasses. Turning, she takes slow, deliberate steps down the middle of the street, the sun shining in a blue sky overhead. Her pace picks up, the skirt of her forest green dress fluttering as she walks away, shoulders back, looking straight ahead. The screen goes dark. Credits. Directed by Mike Flanagan. Screenplay by Mike Flanagan and Jeff Howard. Based on the novel by Stephen King. Produced by Trevor Macy. Co-producer, Melinda Nishioka. Executive producer, D. Scott Lumpkin. Executive producers, Ian Brick and Matt Levin. Starring Carla Gugino, Bruce Greenwood, Henry Thomas, Chiara Aurelia, Kate Siegel, and Carol Striken. Copyright 2017, Handcuffs, LLC. Thank you. letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.